the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler, and if you listen to our weekend show, the Financial Sense News Hour, I'm sure you're aware that the stock market is hitting record highs. And look at that. Investors have jumped back into the market after years of avoiding investments and cringing on the sidelines based on what happened back in 2008. The economy's growing again. It's not spectacular, but it is growing. Consumer confidence, nevertheless, seems to be very high, and the illusion, at least now, is that good times are here to stay, which always bothers me, because then I go, what's wrong with this picture? Because markets don't go up forever, and they don't go down forever either. And the question is, what would happen if stocks go down? What would that do to your portfolio? And especially, since this is our topic of this show, what would that do to impact your retirement? Last decade, we had two bear markets, this none so far. So the question is, any warning signs out there, or should investors just stay the course?
You know, John, I think a lot of that depends on your age, and that's something we try to emphasize here on the program, because obviously something you should be doing at age 20 is obviously much different than what you should be doing for safety reasons when you're in your 50s or 60s or 70s. You know, for example, if you are 25 and just starting out your working career, whether we have another bear market next year or the year after really doesn't make that much difference. In fact, a bear market should be welcomed during your, let's say, accumulation years. It allows you to buy more shares with your money. Most individuals listening to this program, whether you're working for the government with a 457 plan, a 403b plan, or even a 401k plan, what are you doing? Every single pay period, you put money into your 401k. If you're investing in stocks, you're buying stock funds or index funds, whatever you're doing. Now, if you're 25, and let's say the market loses 40% of its value, well, what does that mean for you? That means every single pay period, you're putting money into the market, you're buying more mutual fund shares with the money that you put in because those shares are going down in value. And you really don't care at this point because, quite honestly, you would love to see this. Because let's say if you bought shares at the bottom of the market in March of 2009, think of how much those shares are worth today. So no one will remember, quite honestly, the bear market or worries today 40 years from now. The most important thing you should be focusing on is not whether we're in a bull market or bear market. It is how many shares you're going to own 25, 30, or 40 years from now. So obviously, if you're 20, 30, even early 40s, John, I really don't think it makes a difference if you're in the accumulation phase of riding out a bear market. Now, that's much, much different if you are, let's say, in your 50s or your 60s, because now you're getting closer to retirement. You may be 5 years away, 10 years away. And if you're doing your planning, you want to know, for example, if you have $500,000 in your 401k plan, when you get ready to retire, you want to make sure you have $500,000. You don't want to find yourself, as many investors did between 2007 and 2009, where the stock market lost close to 60% of its value. Market downturns are something that we try to refer to when we're doing retirement planning is something we call sequence risk. And that's facing a bear market at the beginning of your retirement when you need to begin drawing down your assets. What would happen is during a bear market, it could force you to draw down and sell off assets. For example, maybe you have mutual fund shares or ETF at substantially lower prices, leaving you with less assets to support the remaining years of your retirement.
So if you're young and working, there's little need to tap into your assets, barring some kind of an emergency that was unforeseen. And so a bear market where you have ups and downs in the long run, I mean, who's going to remember the bear market of today, 30 or 40 years from now when you go to retire? But on the other hand, you should remember that we have not been able to repeal bear markets. They're going to happen as a phenomenon of nature, and some rulers in some countries, largely dictatorships, have tried to avoid those, but they just seem to happen anyway. But let me ask you a question now. One of the things that people are always told, or we hear anyway, is that stocks always bounce back, even after severe hits like we took back in 2007, 8, 9, that they will always come back. So how does that follow into the logic of things?
Well, I mean, that is true. I mean, we had a bear market in 2000, 2002, stocks came back. Then we went through another bear market, 2007, 2009. Stocks have come back and we're hitting records if you've been watching the markets. So it's true that stocks over the long run have been, John, probably some of the best investments that you can make over a longer period of time. But most people, and especially those individuals that are entering retirement or getting close to retirement, do not have long term. And like I said earlier, if you're 25 years old, if you go through a 2-year bear market, you don't care because you have another 35, 40 years ahead of you. You do care if you're 55 or 60 or even 65, because now you are pulling out your assets and you cannot afford to ride out a bear market and draw down your assets. So the periods of time where stocks go nowhere, it can actually take decades for the markets to recover. A good example was the bear market crash of the Great Depression. The stock market fell in October of 1929 and reached a low in the spring of 1932 when the Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 90% of its value. From the peak that the market reached in 1929, it would be 1954 before the Dow would get back to even. Another example was the stock market between the period of 1966 and 1982, where you had 5 bear markets within a 16-year period, and stocks went nowhere for 16 years. And a final example is what happened at the beginning of the new century. Stocks peaked in the March 2000. They went down for 2 years. It took another 5 years to break even. So by September of 2007, we were back to where we were in March of 2000. But what happened in the fall of 2007? We began another bear market, this time losing 58% of the value, and it would take another 5 years to break even. So if you're in an S&P 500 index fund, you went nowhere for almost 14 years. On top of that, you faced a major decline in interest-bearing investments. So it wasn't like, well, okay, I'm out of stocks, but gee, I'm all in bonds. And many people did go into bonds, and much to their dismay, saw the interest rates on those bond funds drop every single year as the Fed, with its quantitative easing program, began to go in and drive down long-term rates. So if you were in passive investments, the stock market or bond funds, you actually lost ground.
Okay, let's do that. Let's contrast people who are investing, say they're in their 20s and 30s, and you have other people who are in their 50s or 60s. Let's look at the difference.
Once again, a major different investment strategy. Someone in their 20s, 30s, and I would even say somebody in their 40s, is in what we call the accumulation phase. You're putting money away every single month, hopefully, in some kind of 401k program, and hopefully your employer is matching your contributions. So you're accumulating assets. You can afford to take risks. You should be primarily invested in stocks during your accumulation phase because you want to go for growth. And this is the time of your life you can go through it for growth because you have a job, you're working, you don't need to draw down the assets to support yourself. And so if you're saving and investing on a regular basis, that's exactly what you should be doing. But let's contrast that to somebody in their 50s and 60s. You need to be more careful. You need to be defensive. And what I would say, more proactive with your investments. Somebody in their 20s, let's say you went into stock funds, you pretty much can stay there for several decades because you're accumulating stocks over the long term, eventually go up. And even though it took, for example, almost 14 years from the year 2000 to the year 2014 for the stock market to break even, during that period of time, you were accumulating shares at lower prices. Now that the market has come up, those shares you bought during the downturn are worth much, much more money. So people in their 50s should alter their portfolio mix. And this is one of the big things that we see when we're doing financial plans. A lot of people have 401k plans where, you know, you started working for your employer, you picked out your asset allocation mix, and pretty much it's been on automatic pilot from the day you started work. You haven't made any adjustments. Number two, you should be more conservative with less risk. So you shouldn't be 100% invested in stock funds. You should have more bond funds. You should be more diversified. And if you are 5 or 10 years away from retirement, you really need to be more proactive, number one. Number two, more diversified. And number three, more defensive. Because if you have, let's say you're age 60 and you plan on retiring at age 66 when you're at full retirement age and get your Social Security benefits, if you have $500,000 in your 401k program, you want to make sure at age 66 that you have $500,000 or perhaps more, since you have another 5 years to accumulate. What you don't want to do is at age 66, for an example, let's assume that you retire in 2007 or 2008. And you had your $500,000 at the beginning of 2007. Think of what happened to your stock funds during that 2 year period of time when the S&P lost 60% of its value. That is not what you want to do when you start out your retirement, is go through that sequence risk and get hit with the bear market. This hit quite a few boomers, John. And it's one reason we're seeing a lot more boomers work longer today, because of the bear market of 2000 and the bear market of 2007.
If I'm interpreting correctly what you're saying, you don't want to be totally out of stocks, but you do want less exposure than you, say, had in your younger years. It's a risk management issue.
Yeah, it's a risk management issue. And it's not just having less exposure to stocks. You know, somebody age 55 may want to have 60% in stocks versus somebody in their 40s that could have 80 to 90% in stocks. But it's also the type of stocks that you own. If you're in your 50s, you should be in large cap, blue chip kind of stock funds or dividend paying stocks that grow their dividends versus, let's say, small cap or emerging markets, things that carry more beta, meaning they're more volatile and also have a higher exposure to risk. And the reason they call them blue chips, like the Dow, is these are companies that have been around for a long time. They have strong balance sheets. They have strong businesses. They have predictable earnings. That is the thing that you want. You want more reliability and you want more predictability. If you're in the bond market, of course, we favor laddered bonds or what we call proactive bond managers with good track records, or short-term bond funds. Something new, John, that we began recommending, and this is especially after the 2007-2009 downturn, is having a year's worth of living expense in cash. It could be in CDs, money market funds, treasury bills, whatever it is that makes you feel comfortable, but you want it very liquid. And the reason I say that is many individuals need to draw on their assets when they retire. They have their Social Security and they're dependent on their investment portfolio to provide them income to make up their retirement lifestyle. The reason we say have a year's worth of living expenses in the bank is, let's say, for example, you retired at the end of 2007. 2008 and 2009, the stock market is going through a bear market. The market would lose 58% of its value. If you had a year's worth of living expenses in cash that you could draw down, that would enable you the freedom of not having to sell off your assets when they're going down in value, which often happens in a bear market. So you can ride out that bear market because you're not drawing down those assets. For example, you have a portfolio that's 50% bonds, 50% stocks, and let's assume that the stocks that you own are the Coca-Colas, Exxons, Procter & Gamble's, dividend-paying Dow-type stocks. If you have a year's worth of living expenses, you can afford to take the income from your dividends, the income from your bonds, and use that to supplement without having to sell off your stocks or even sell off your bonds to live, because you are drawing down mainly from cash. So that, you know, even though stocks, even blue chips, fall during a market downturn, I mean, Coca-Cola is a blue chip stock. It went from 30 down to 20. But if you didn't have to sell it because you didn't need to draw down your assets and tap into your principal, you could have just collected your dividends. Your dividends would have gone up. And then when the bull market began in March of 2009, by the end of 2009, Coca-Cola was back up to 30 again. So you didn't have to liquidate in a market downturn.
If we look forward toward the retirement years, I think you have to factor in medical expenses in later years. Now, not just medical expenses, but also look at the impact of inflation over the course of your retirement. It's not just a matter of losing assets when we talk about putting things at risk, but in this case, the erosion of the value of the assets that you have.
Yeah, I mean, there's three or four things you need to know about sources of income. You have to have increasing sources of income throughout your retirement years. The average couple today, age 65, between husband and wife, between the both of you, you will live 25 years. So whatever you're spending money on today is going to be more expensive 10 years from now, 20 years from now, or 25 years from now. And it really starts to mount up 10 years into your retirement, especially when you get into your later years in your 70s and 80s, when medical expenses really start to mount. So there's three ways that you can account for increasing income. Number one, you can work longer, or postpone retirement, or do something like working part-time. That's one way to increase your income. Secondly, you can save the income that you get each year. If you're spending $50,000 a year to live, you have $60,000 in income, well, you can save that $10,000 so you can add to your portfolio, making it larger. And three, you can have investments. Like, for example, blue chip stocks, it increased their dividends. So you're not doing anything. The company is actually increasing your income through the business itself. So this is important to handle, especially healthcare insurance, which we talk a lot about on here. And one of the reasons why we have so many doctors and health specialists on the program that can help you live a better and more healthy life, because this brings another point, inflation adjusted returns. You brought up, John, Nelly, that there's risk in the stock market. There's also inflation risk. As I mentioned, the stock market went nowhere from 2000 to 2014. But if you adjust the impact for inflation, it is actually much worse. If you look at the stock market during that period of time, it was basically flat in terms of returns, but it was actually much worse than that. If you factor in inflation, it was actually a negative rate of return, because obviously in 2017, you cannot buy the same goods and services with a dollar or $10,000 today that you could back in 2000. So, I mean, if you're listening to this program, think back, if you've been retired 5 years, 10 years, think of where you're spending money today, what it's costing you to live, whether it's food, utilities, your property taxes, your Medicare premiums, your supplement premiums, even the vacations you take. Compare that today to what you were spending for those very same things 5 or 10 years ago. And I'll give you an example when I talk about inflation-adjusted returns. This is something most people don't analyze when you're looking at retirement. Let's just make this simple and say you have money in the bank and you're getting 1% in a CD, which is pretty much where CD rates are today. Let's say you're in a 30% combined tax bracket, which a lot of retirees are, between federal and state. So if you back out 30% of the 1% return, your net return after taxes is 0.7%. Well, let's take that 0.7% and you compare that to the inflation rate of 1.6%, you were actually losing ground on your investments. And I've had a lot of retirees over the years tell me that they didn't really understand or fully appreciate the impact of inflation, because it's kind of like a silent disease that kind of creeps up on you. Little by little, you notice little things at a time. It cost you more. Your Medicare premium went up. Your Medicare insurance went up. Your utility bills went up. You're going to the grocery store. It costs more. Gasoline prices go up. It costs more to replace the car. All these things add up. And this doesn't compare to healthcare inflation, which runs between 6 and 8% a year for retirees. So your net return is actually negative. I mean, it's positive in the sense that most people say, well, I made money. But what you have to do is take a look at what was your return after taxes and after inflation. You may not feel it today, but eventually it catches up to you in the later years where it has its greatest impact.
I think if we were to summarize everything that people need to know about their portfolios as far as retirement goes, let's itemize these here. Number one, markets go down, and bear markets can affect retirees much differently than younger workers. That's important. Younger workers have longer times to recover from downturns, especially if you're relying on a portfolio to keep you supported while you're in retirement. Now, number two, as you age and you get close to retirement, you should be, like 10 years out, adjusting risk levels of your portfolio. Number three, inflation has to be factored into your lifestyle and into your investment returns. It's always going to be there because the central banks of the world are on this committed path from which they can't recover. And so that's just the issue. So inflation has to be factored in there. Four, you don't want to be exposed to a bear market as you begin retirement. And this is a matter of timing, of just watching where the markets are, knowing what stage of the business cycle you're in, and then timing your retirement appropriately. Remember, it's important to become proactive with your investments 10 years prior to retirement, and then throughout the retirement years to protect against number one, risk, and number two, inflation. Six, understand that stocks do well over long periods of time, but there are protracted periods where they do not. So don't assume that the long-term assumptions, two assumptions here, don't assume about the assumptions that most investment models do of 10% as being necessarily true. Life and stocks and everything are a living phenomenon. And 10% or other averages only show what's been in the past, but may or may not be true in the future. And that's why, number seven, it's incumbent upon you to know and fully understand your risk and the risk you're taking in the portfolio. Those are the seven items you can take away from our conversation here today.
You know, John, it's one of the things that we do sometimes that will surprise people. And we see this a lot. And maybe if you're listening, this registers with you. But a lot of individuals, we put them through a risk assessment, and especially both husband and wife, because a lot of times there's variances between their risk levels. And then it comes out with a risk score. And most people, especially if they're getting close to retirement, we usually find them on a risk scale of 1 to 10. Most of the time, they're in the 3 to 4 area when it comes to risk. What really surprises them is when we analyze their portfolio, there are 3 or 4 on a risk scale personally, but their actual portfolio is a risk of 7 or 8. In many cases, and we hear this all the time, repeatedly, well, you know, it was when I started with the company, we set up the program and I put X amount in this fund and this fund, and pretty much it's been on automatic pilot, not realizing already 10, 15, 20 years has gone by. And obviously, their risk level assessment is much different. And a lot of people, even those that are still working, rode out the downturn of 2007 and 2009. And, you know, one of the things we hear is, I don't want to go through another 2007 and 2009. So when we put them through the risk scale, that's usually what is reflected when we see a score of 3 and 4. What is really surprising many times is when we tell them, well, you're a 3 and 4 on a risk scale, but did you realize your portfolio is a 7 and 8? And we break it down even further as we take the dollar amount, because our program can analyze the things they own, the risk, and also the market cycle, saying that, you know, on your $100,000, your upside potential where the market is right now is maybe 10,000, but your downside is 40,000. So we break it down into numbers, and people say, wow, there's no way I want to take that kind of loss. But it's something that often we see many times, because people just aren't cognizant of what they're beginning to feel as they get older and get closer to retirement, and then not putting it together in terms of where they're actually invested.
Coming up tomorrow on the program, Dr. Stephen Gundry is joining us. He's a noted heart surgeon and cardiologist. The book is The Plant Paradox. You know, a lot of times we hear about homeopathic and other forms of medicine using herbs, etc. There are hidden dangers in health foods and herbs and other things you might buy from a health food store that can actually cause disease and weight gain, believe it or not. So that's going to be an interesting one, because some people have gotten on diets thinking, I'm going to lose a lot of weight, and instead they gain weight, and they're going, what's going on here? So that's tomorrow here on Lifetime Income. Dr. Stephen Gundry. Time for our real-life case study, which is an hypothetical illustration based on real-life examples. Remember that the names and circumstances have been changed, and we do have PowerPoint slides at financialsense.com, which illustrate the points Jim is making.
And this week, we're going to talk about Barry and Audrey Stamper. Barry is age 65. Audrey is age 62. They're both getting close to retirement. They want to retire within 1 to 2 years, especially since Barry will be eligible for full Social Security benefits and Audrey shortly. Barry's life expectancy, a long line of his parents, grandparents living into their 90s. Barry, his life expectancy is 90, 95 for Audrey. Same thing on their side. Risk tolerance is conservative, income with capital preservation. Now to add a little color, Barry is a little bit different. He has run a successful manufacturing company for over 2 decades and is beginning to contemplate retirement. The business is doing well, and he has the ability to delegate a lot of his responsibilities among some key employees that can manage the day-to-day operations. Now, aside from business, he also owns some commercial property that produces additional income. Barry's primary concern is how to maximize the assets they have and how to reduce taxes. He would like to make sure that his grandkids all get a college education without the tremendous burden of debt that we see so many college kids take on today. Barry also wants to make sure that some of his money is left to give to the church that they attend and also some of their favorite charities. Audrey, on the other hand, was a homemaker. She looks forward to her husband retiring so they can spend more time together and pursue the lot of passions that they have in common. She's also concerned about her kids and grandkids and wants to make sure they all have the opportunities she did not have growing up. Audrey wants to minimize their taxes, but isn't looking for complex ways of doing so. She would prefer a simplified approach, if possible, to manage taxes and legacy planning, especially since it's more likely she will outlive Barry. She would also like to be more conservative with her investing now that they have a sizable nest egg. Audrey mentioned that it has been uncomfortable for her since they had so much risk in the business and how they have been invested over the years. Obviously, thinking back to the 2007-2009 downturn, their current risk score was a 4. Their current portfolio was a 7. So Audrey had some real practical concerns here, because the portfolio was much higher risk than it should be, given the fact that they wanted to retire in the next couple of years. Now, what was important to both of them? Number one, they wanted a retirement plan and an estate plan, But they also didn't want something that was very complicated, because running a business, anybody that has a business, you know, whether you're a sub S or a C corporation, pensions, all the filing, the taxes, the filing and things that you have to do, it's somewhat complicated. So they wanted to uncomplicate their finances to some degree. They wanted to reduce risk. And this was really strong coming from Audrey, because she remembers what it was like, what happened to many of their assets in 2007 and 2009. They've come back from that downturn period and they have substantially more assets today. And they also want to, of course, leave some kind of legacy, not only to charity, but also for their children as well. Their budget, roughly about $130,000 for essentials, $53,000 discretionary, roughly about $180,000 a year. Barry's salary was $300,000, $40,000 coming in from income. So they had a nice surplus of over $150,000 a year, which allowed them to build up a substantial nest egg. They factored in if they retired, there would be less on the essential side, but basically about $105,000-$110,000. Discretionary being pretty much the same. They would be doing the same things like travel, playing golf. So their total budget would be $159,000. Combined Social Security would be $45,000. Rental income would be $40,000. The shortfall would be $74,000. Now, if we look at their assets, their primary residence was worth $750,000. The business had a market value in terms of sales. And this is something that if you are running your own business, you really need to be alert to, because if it's illiquid, let's say it's privately held. Remember, if something happened to you or both you and your spouse, the IRS is going to come in and they're going to place a value on that business, usually so many times sales or profit. So the business was worth about $8 million. Rental property, about $2.4 million. Barry's retirement assets were worth over $2 million. Audrey's retirement, $320,000. Joint accounts of $524,000. And cash and precious metals of $136,000. Total investment assets of $3 million. Total assets of roughly $14 million. In liabilities, mainly on the rental properties, of $140,000. Net worth, roughly about $14 million. So they were well beyond the amount that they could shelter with the living trust. And so at this point forward, and also given their earning potential and their age, they were subject to 40% estate taxes. So this was a concern. So when we calculated what their estate taxes were, and then we used some reasonable assumptions on, let's say, the sale of the business, and also what their growth in assets would be, because they actually had more assets in value than they could possibly spend, given their lifestyle, it wasn't going to change that dramatically if they retired. So we wanted to minimize estate taxes and also leave assets to charity and also their children. It was also important to Audrey that they have some kind of account set up for their grandchildren for their education. Basically, their income without looking at their portfolio was about $85,000 a year. What we did is we did a balanced portfolio, more on the fixed income side, in order to reduce some of the risk that they had. The portfolio returns were roughly about 3%. Total income from investments would be roughly about $82,000 a year, a grand total of about $167,000 less a budget of $159,000, leaving them a surplus of about $8,000 a year. Now, here was the key thing. Due to the size of their estate, they were going to be subject to estate taxes under the current rules. Our objective was to keep the planning simple, since they do not want complex, cumbersome solutions like family, limited partnerships, charitable remainder, charitable lead trust. In this case, we recommended we established a second-to-die life insurance policy that would be placed in a wealth replacement trust. Doing this would provide them with the liquidity to pay for the anticipated estate taxes. We also recommended that Barry and Audrey use use their IRA assets to meet their legacy planning goals for charity and nonprofits. We made these recommendations so that the charities would not have to pay taxes like their individual heirs would. We also suggested that non-retirement assets be left to the family so they could receive what is called a stepped-up basis in cost and eliminate all capital gains for their heirs. In combination with life insurance, we suggested they begin to sell some of their real estate in order to create more liquidity to meet their goals before and after their death. Now, given their concerns and their proximity to retirement and the size of their estate, we also recommended that their investment portfolio be reflected of a more conservative portfolio, given that they had enough assets. So it wasn't like they had to stretch in order to make a high rate of return, as some people try to do when they realize they don't have enough assets. So that in itself, John, was how we kept it simple. We discussed the idea of a charitable remainder trust, charitable lead trust, and with our estate planning attorney, several of these options were put out on the table, but they were just too complex. They wanted it simple and easy, and that's exactly what we did.
And again tomorrow on the program, Dr. Stephen Gundry, The Plant Paradox, Hidden Dangers in Health Foods That Cause Disease and Weight Gain. All right, Jim, weeks to come, what are we looking forward to other than watching the markets?
Weeks to come, we are going to be talking about investment markets, and we're going to be talking about de-risking because, you know, sooner or later, we are in a Fed rate raising cycle. And just as we had quantitative easing for so many years, now we have quantitative tightening. And it's not just the Fed. The Bank of Canada is tightening and raising interest rates. Soon, the ECB is hinting that they're going to be cutting back. So we know, John, sooner or later, history tells us, and it's been this way for more than 70 years now, every recession, every bear market has been preceded by a Fed tightening cycle. So we're going to be talking about de-risking portfolios, because if you listen to last weekend's program, there's a lot of concentrated risk out there. And so we're going to talk about what you can do to maybe get a little bit more safe in your investment portfolio, just as we did with Audrey and Barry. But in the meantime, well, as always, we're out of time. And do listen to my interview with Dr. Gundry tomorrow. He is a noted cardiologist and heart surgeon. He was head of the medical college at Loma Linda University. So he's very, very well known. He speaks throughout the world, and he's written a new book called The Plant Paradox. I read it recently, and there were a lot of things that came out of this book. I had no idea that they would be poor for my health. And so you're going to want to listen to this interview and the things he has to say. That's coming up tomorrow here on the program. In the meantime, on behalf of John Leffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.